Delighted to be your host again. As we're getting the year rolling, it's so wonderful to have an opportunity to address some of the key things. For some people, things are moving along smoothly in their lives, and yet if you check in the news and talk to many neighbors or friends or people out there, you know that the world is in a challenging time. Of course, we have a guest today that's going to talk about their company is called Wake Up Enterprises, which will tie right in with something important. We're hearing, and as President Obama was telling us, let's pitch in and help out the country. Let's help each other. Well, that sounds easy to say, and for some people that might be easy to do, especially if things are working out well in their lives. But what if things are a little tough? What if some of our relationships are a little hurting, or there's some adversarial stuff going on? Well, wouldn't it be handy? I mean, just really great to have someone come on board and spend some time with us that is an amazing international author, coach, speaker, and trainer that is an evolutionary relationship expert. Well, yes, you've got it right. Lori Cameron is here with us today, and she is going to help us to learn about what is going to be some of the key factors that we can do to wake up our relationships. It's her mission to promote a culture of compassion in our homes and offices and schools and have people wake up their relationships, transform their lives, and as she knows that the best way to do that is actually simple in words, and it, of course, takes some practice. Choose more loving thoughts, words, and actions today than you did yesterday. And Lori is a master certified relationship coach and relationship with a Relationship Coaching Institute and a certified coach with Coach Training Alliance and a graduate of Coach U. And she's had a number of publications, The Journey from Fear to Love, Waking Up, a wonderful new book of hers, and a contributing author to Exploring Coaching, an e-book, and the Sage and Scholar's Guide to Coaching Singles, numerous articles in various magazines and newspapers, and another weekly e-zine, Thriving After Divorce. So get ready, folks. We're going to have some fun meeting and talking with Lori Cameron. Hello, Lori.
Hi, Kenneth. How are you today?
Oh, I am so excited to have you out here with my guests and myself to sparkle on us and let us learn some of the wonderful ways. You've got this new book, The Journey from Fear to Love. And I'd like to check with you and help you to make it more understandable for us. What makes this book different from other relationship books out there?
Well, there are a lot of similarities with other concepts. People have told me it's similar to A Course in Miracles, similar to emotional intelligence. And what makes it unique really is it comes from my own experiences, and my own experiences are unique to me. And it's also the idea of an evolutionary relationship is new. And that's one thing that I wanted to bring out in this. And it actually, the book actually came about having a conversation with a friend in March of 2007. Boy, that feels like a long time ago. We were talking about that we are evolutionaries, that we're not revolutionaries, but we are evolutionaries. And our task right now is to help the collective consciousness evolve to where it needs to go. So that was where the book came from. And it's also unique because it's a workbook within a book, because I'm a coach and I'm all about taking action. So part of the book, too, is offering the reader a way to determine where they are right now in their lives along the continuum from fear to love. And by seeing where you are now and consciously and intentionally making changes in your thoughts, words, and actions, then you can actually chart your personal evolution from fear to love as you go along.
Wow. That sounds fascinating. Now, I am just kind of wondering, because our culture seems in some ways, especially if you have the newspaper picked up or turn on TV, the news or certain programs, the word drama is huge.
Yes.
Oh, we give good drama. Our drama is better than their drama.
Yes.
You can't get more exciting drama than if you tune into us. And
right.
And I'm going, wow, most of the things that I see with the drama, I don't see many people having a good time with each other. So what can we do to, can we really eliminate this drama from our relationships?
Yeah, well, I believe so, because I have. And I have what I think is a pretty drama-free life, including all of my relationships. And drama really is a combination of making assumptions and taking things personally. And a disagreement does not have to create emotional conflict and drama. We really are addicted to drama. You're right, Kenneth. It is all over the place. Our TV shows, our music, our politics, it's all heightened, and everybody everywhere is making assumptions and making it about them, and then that leads into blame and being a victim, and this whole thing gets really blown out of proportion. And the little teeny secret is that it's a choice, and you don't have to get sucked into someone else's drama. And what I tell some of the students in some of the classes, the relationship classes that I teach, is you don't have to attend every argument you're invited to. Yeah, and that seems to resonate with a lot of people. And because we think if somebody says something or does something, or we're telling a story about what they're doing, we're kind of making up their motivation or whatever is going on in our heads, that somehow if it's an attack, we have to defend. And that's not the case. And eliminating drama really is about recognizing when you're making the stories, when you're making it about yourself, and letting that go and remembering that someone else's gunk, whatever's going on for them, really is about their own fears. And even if you feel like a target, it's really not about you. It's really about them. So being able to make that distinction is a way to literally, and yes, eliminate drama from your life. And how much more energy would we have to put towards living our mission and supporting each other and creating community and collaboration if so much of our energy was not tied up in all the drama that's going on around us?
Yes, exactly, because it seems like if we play the drama game, there's a winner and a loser.
We think there should be.
Yeah, I don't think both people are supposed to come out happy in a drama. You know, the Super Bowl, the team that doesn't win, they're not supposed to party. Or in an argument, someone may win the argument, but then the relationship is in pain for a while. So we're talking about an evolutionary relationship, and I wonder what we can do to learn more about that way of thinking and being.
Yeah, and you're right. When you talk about winning an argument, there really is no winning. If there's arguing, there is no winning. It's just two people or a group of people deciding that they're right, the other person's wrong, and there really is not any kind of a win in there. And an evolutionary relationship, how I define it, is it's where both people in a relationship, and it might be a marriage, a domestic partner, business partner, parent, child, neighbor, friend. We're in relationship with every single human being in our lives. And an evolutionary relationship is when both people in the relationship are aware enough to allow each other the freedom to grow and evolve more naturally and gracefully. So each person's goal is to assist the other in growing and evolving more naturally and easily and gracefully, so that you're supporting the other person in that, they're supporting you in that, and you can't help but to grow, learn from your mistakes, do things better tomorrow than you did today, make better choices. And it's that almost like an automatic support system that you have within a relationship.
Hmm. Now, is that what you call an emotional autopilot?
No,
is that
actually
a different thing?
Yeah, that's different. Emotional autopilot is when we are responding based on our conditioning and fears. So all of us, however long we've been living on the planet, we've been conditioned to think and respond and act and speak in a certain way. Like for somebody, the term win-win might mean really positive based on their experience and their conditioning with that. Other people might consider that to be very manipulative. So the conditioning is different. And when we operate unconsciously, essentially, on our conditioning, and it's just when we respond. Somebody says something, we respond back because that's kind of the way we've been trained, conditioned, or always done it. That's emotional autopilot. And that's what I call being unconscious, because you're not really aware of what's going on and how you're responding, and you're not really aware of the impact that your thoughts, words, or actions are having on your life or the lives of the people around you. And you can't change what you're not aware of.
So yeah.
If you're getting negative results, and more typically our conditioning comes from fear, comes from something that is not quite as healthy as it might be, which means the consequences of when we choose a particular thought or a word or an action, the consequence of that choice is probably not very healthy either. And I really believe we all want lives that flow and feel right and are joyful and not without challenge, but still, you know, a little bit more in the flow than a lot of the struggle that we experience on a fairly regular basis. I think we all want that, but we don't know what to do to get that. And if you don't know what to do instead, then you fall back on your old conditioning, and that's kind of like your only choice. It's your default position.
Yeah. Yeah. So now, is that the evolutionary part? Is that what you're talking about in terms of waking up? Or?
Yeah. And I define waking up as choosing more loving and compassionate thoughts, words, and actions today than you did yesterday. So it really is a small day-by-day process, because if you think about the overall process of evolution, it happens over time. And it happens kind of bits and pieces over time. And same with personal evolution. And waking up takes time. And it happens one choice after another choice after another choice.
Wow, okay. And the benefits, I guess, people are always going, well, what's in it for me? Why would I want to wake up?
Yeah, you know, there's a common quote out there, ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
Well, I changed that. My quote is, ignorance is not bliss, it's just ignorance. And like I said, you can't change what you're not aware of. So waking up really is becoming more aware of all that's going on inside of you and all that's going on externally to you as well, and kind of sitting back and saying, okay, is this the life I want? Is this the relationship I want? Are these the experiences and the situations I really want that are supporting me the most? And if any of those answers are no, then being aware of that no gives you the freedom to start making new choices. To say, okay, I don't want that. And, you know, was it Einstein that was credited with the quote, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over again and expecting different results?
Yeah.
Well, staying unconscious, not waking up or not wanting to, or staying in that ignorance place, is insanity. Because if you keep doing the same things and saying the same things and thinking the same thoughts and expecting your life to change, it's just not going to happen. And waking up and being more aware of what's going on inside of you and around you is your opportunity, everybody's opportunity, to make changes and start doing things differently in order to start having the life, creating the life that you really want.
Okay. Now, for some people, the answer might be obvious to this. I mean, how can you tell if you're in a relationship that's based more on fear than love? But some people, if they're staying in battering relationships, so
yeah.
So this is a meaty question.
Yeah, it really is. And I believe in the wisdom of our bodies. And I believe that our bodies are a lot wiser than our minds are and let us know. And I think people know when they're in a relationship that's coming more from fear than from love, because they can feel it in their body. Even if they can't identify it in those terms exactly, they still know it. Because when you're coming from fear, your breathing is shallow, you get that anxiety in your gut, or there's a withdrawing feeling or a tightness, or it turns out to be, you know, muscle problems, or it turns into disease, it turns into emotional stress. All of those things. So when we are in fear, emotionally or physically or mentally or spiritually, then it's going to be showing in our bodies. And that's one of the first places I ask my clients to check in with, to really understand what's going on with them and where they are. And if you check in with your body and say, so what's going on? Do I feel relaxed? Do I feel open and expanded? Do I feel like anything is possible? Is my breathing slow and deep and natural? That's when you are really coming from that place of love and inner truth. And if you're saying, no, I'm feeling pretty stressed out, I'm pretty tense, my neck hurts, I'm just breathing funny, and I feel like I'm, you know, when your shoulders are kind of closed in around your chest, protecting your heart, then you're coming from fear.
Ah.
It's pretty simple,
okay.
Actually.
Ah, so at some level, is it okay to say fear is equal to pain, or?
Well,
I don't know if our body lets us know that or not, if we're not comfortable. Maybe pain's not the only way it's expressed, like
right,
you were
and
saying.
I think pain is definitely one of the ways that it manifests in our bodies, and I know that different bodies, it comes out differently. But the fight-or-flight response, which is really the physiological response to fear or perceived fear, is there's a chemical response going on in the body, and the body really cannot maintain that for very long. And there are people, and I know that I'm one of them, that, you know, spent decades in fight or flight, and it's not healthy, and it started taking its toll on my body as well. And as I am cleaning that up and taking care of that and paying attention to the physiological responses that my thoughts and words are creating for me, and as I start shifting my thoughts and shifting my words, then my health is actually responding as well.
Mm. Yeah. Huh. Well, this is important. So this fight or flight is really not the name of a travel agency.
It's
something to be avoided when we want to make a better journey, as you say, from fear to love.
Yeah. Well, and this is what your show is all about, Kenneth. Too. This is advanced living, which is it's kind of like the advanced degree of our lives to say, okay, I need to learn how to pay more attention to what I'm thinking and what I'm saying and where I'm coming from and what's going on inside of me and what's going on out around me. And that's waking up and being, creating evolutionary relationships and being an evolutionary really is advanced living that you talk about.
Mm. Yes, and I guess it's a point that's so well coming into people's awareness more and more about the question, can we really change our outcomes by changing our thoughts?
My experience is yes, because I know that my negative thoughts and when I give energy and power to fears that pop up, I know that I can just feel myself, my life, my goals, my purpose kind of shutting down and closing in on itself. And when I am thinking and focusing on the possibilities in my life, my vision, my purpose here, my calling and mission, and what it is I'm here to do, then my energy starts opening up, my body opens up, people start showing up to support me in that, and I heard it for years as well and knew it and believed it on a some level. And since I've been actually experiencing it and noticing it, I'm a firm believer that it's absolutely true. And obviously it requires action as well, especially to step into what it is that you want to do in the world or what you want to create. And yet it starts with our thoughts. And what I run across too, and I had a client just this morning who I kept catching her in language that was either stopping her or kind of setting her back in her goals. And by asking her to change her language, she reported that she felt more positive, more courageous, that she was ready to take action. So I've seen it over and over again in my own life and with my clients. Have you recognized that as well?
Oh, absolutely. There's such a difference when we're in the midst of a drama and we're feeling under attack for some reason. That brings into our consciousness and our thoughts a set of ways of addressing that, and when we can step back from that and come from a different place of observing some of the things, like you say, well, you can't change the past, and you say, you know, you can't change what you're not aware of. So as we become aware of some of these dynamics, and well, we don't have to show up for every argument that we're invited to, all of a sudden, then we can say, wow, I value you, and I want to pause because I don't want to say anything that I think could cause harm because of how important you are to me. Or,
right.
Or who knows what. There's a lot of different ways, and I'd be happy to hear, and our listeners would love hearing perhaps some examples of people that you've coached and their experiences with choosing different thoughts, bringing more love for them.
Well, actually, a particular client comes to mind that was just extreme. And she came to me for coaching around with her marriage because she figured that it was literally on the brink. And her difficulty was that her husband pretty much wasn't doing what she wanted him to do. And he was doing what he felt was appropriate and right, and it didn't agree with her, what she felt was appropriate and right, and the harder she tried to make him change, the more he resisted it. And all of her thoughts, and it started with her thoughts of, he's doing it wrong, he's not listening, he's, you know, all these list of things that was about him. And through our coaching, she started shifting that around to, well, what was her role in the dynamic in the relationship, and what could she start changing? And what she started changing was she started sending him loving thoughts and words as well. And rather than saying things like, you know, essentially, you need to change this, she started accepting him for what was important in his life. They started talking about it more. And she, as she stepped back with her angry thoughts and started sending loving thought and compassion, a lot of compassion, because she also realized that he was coming from a lot of his own fears, and she was not in a position to see him before, but when she stepped back and started opening up, she's able to see his fears and know that that's really where he was coming from. And like I said before, it wasn't about her so much as it was about what he was afraid of. And she started sending loving, compassionate thoughts to him, and he started changing.
Wow.
And he started softening, and he started responding more positively to her as well, and they actually found places to meet in the middle. So it really only took her to start changing her response to him in order for him to change. I know. It's fascinating.
Oh, that can't be. That's too easy.
It is. Well, and I have an example. Another example is a client who, and after a divorce, especially a very difficult divorce, she was still really sending some nasty thoughts to her former spouse for years. I mean, years and years. And they didn't see each other much because, you know, their daughter was in college. And my client all of a sudden realized that she didn't want to hold that energy because it was actually affecting her own health by holding all those negative thoughts, all that energy, all that anger. And she actually started... Every time she noticed the anger, which is also victim, which is also blame, and all those other really nasty, snarky-type thoughts, whenever she noticed that come up, she would immediately shift that to thinking, just thinking in her head, thank you for helping me get to where I am. Thank you for the challenge of the divorce. You know, thank you for really pushing me to stand on my own. When she started sending those thoughts, within 6 months, her daughter noticed the difference that the father was responding more positively to the mother, and there was not one word exchanged between the two of them. It was all on that thought, energetic plane. And I really believe it has a lot to do with, well, we're all connected on an energetic level. It's like we're all swimming in the same energy pool together. And when she stopped sending all that negative, harmful, hateful energy in his direction, when she stopped doing that, he stopped having to push back and defend against it. And I really believe that that's what helped him up.
Wow. Oh, that's tremendous.
And I will also say she reported to me they are not best friends, and yet their relationship is a lot softer and a lot easier to manage. So.
Yeah. Well, there was a, many years ago, Evander Holyfield, who did very, very well as a professional boxer.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the interesting things, because we look at boxing, especially getting all worked up about kill the bomb and boy, you gotta, you know, you hate that opponent, that kind of a thing, and it's some of that even gets into pervasive in sports type of a thing, and of course there's a carryover in some relationships. The divorce didn't work out, a friend or foe, they're my enemy. And Holyfield had written a was interviewed in an article, and one of the things he said is, I don't have to hate my opponent to be victorious.
Wow, and that's profound. I love
yes.
that.
Yeah, and then you're sharing with us an example about that that is so important, and our listeners, I want to remind them of one of the favorite sayings. Because when we have anger towards someone or resentment, and they may have done something really ungood, unnice, you know, it's not like something didn't happen that may have hurt you.
Right.
But holding that resentment, the way it was described is having resentment for someone is like taking poison and waiting for the other person to die.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite quotes too, and it's so true.
Yeah. And so here you are talking about this woman who let go of that, being in a position to love herself more, and in the process of doing something good for herself, got the benefit of a softening in a relationship that was very adversarial.
Yes, absolutely. And I don't know about you, Kenneth, but from what I do know about you, I believe that you agree is that, you know, being in that loving, compassionate energy space is just, it just feels better than being tight and closed and in the fear. And that in itself, you know, for anybody who's really tired of that anger, blame, victim, drama, you know, kind of feeling disconnected from themselves or from the world, all of that's based in fear, and as soon as they're ready to try on a new way of living, it's not that complicated. It takes time, and it takes a commitment to yourself, and yet the strategies that I offer in the book are really pretty simple.
Well, this is something now. I'm tempted to hear, and I don't know if this is tying in with the resentment kind of a thing. Some of your book, there's a phrase about peeing in one's own pool.
Stop peeing in your own pool.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes I crack myself up with that stuff.
But that's
actually an analogy that I came up with, and, you know, like we were talking about a few minutes ago, is that we are all swimming in the same energy pool, and the thoughts that you think are electrical impulses, and, you know, science has already essentially proved that they go out into the world and they actually do affect other human beings physiologically. And so thinking negative, hateful thoughts about yourself or about another person or a situation is like being in your own pool. Because we're all swimming in the same pool, and
yeah.
And it's not something that we think about a lot. Which is one of the things that I'm here to do. excuse me, is to help people wake up and say, "Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, when I think these thoughts about somebody else, I used to think that, you know, it wasn't harming them." You know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. Well, names are hurtful, and they do have an impact. And even if they're just thoughts that we think, because I've done this as well with kinesiology. I do muscle testing on people in some of my programs, and when they are thinking about somebody that they're really having a challenged relationship with, they muscle test very weak. And then I have them send positive, loving light to that person. You know, imagine in their mind's eye that person standing in front of them, and they're sending them loving, compassionate light straight into their heart, and then they always test really strong. And there's nothing that changed. The person didn't change a thing. The situation didn't change. The only thing that changed was the person's thoughts, perceptions, and thoughts. And it's a striking contrast to be able to see that. I'm sorry we're not able to do that on the radio.
It's a little trickier to do.
It's quite a contrast.
And we haven't done as well either with the radio program on applying makeup. That one
that's true.
Has also run into some glitches there. But then again, for clown face, we're doing pretty good.
Yes, that's funny.
Now, what would be helpful, Lori? Can you share your website and contact information, and you know, with people so that we can get this out there a couple times?
Thank you very much. The website is lauriecameron.com, and that's lauriecameron.com. And my book is there. I have a bi-monthly newsletter. I'm sorry, bi-weekly newsletter. It's called The Wake-Up Call, with articles and resources. And anybody that has any questions, my phone number is there. Do you want me to give my phone number?
Yeah, if you'd like.
Sure. The area code is 303. The number is 740-0352.
And so you're available for speaking engagements, for one-on-one, or family, or group coaching,
or corporate training. Yes, if any of your listeners have a department or a team at their work, or a small company, and they want to enhance their business and personal relationships, I come into companies and do trainings as well. I'm here to bring people together and help them wake up. That really is my mission, and to expand their capacity for being aware and conscious, and help them become evolutionaries in their own lives.
Yay, we like that.
Yay, yeah, it is fun.
Thank you, Lori. And our program on Advanced Living Radio is brought to you by AdvancedLiving.com, where I'm so proud to invite you to go check things out for stress relief, for better living. There's an item called a comfort clock, because we live with stressful energies from an electric world. And plugging this in, we have people like Jack Canfield and Michael Beckwith and Daniel Brinkley and many doctors that are seeing a big difference. So invite you to check that out, and know that it's not the total answer, because Lori is providing us with some practical steps, and the comfort clock could be a background energetic support for you. So thank you for tuning in, and thank you, AdvancedLiving.com. Now, Lori,
mm-hmm.
on your a little bit more with your book there. What I'm wondering is, some of these principles, if someone's been entrenched in a tough thing, does it take a lot of work to make these changes?
It depends on what you call work. But yes, it takes a strong commitment to want to improve and wake up and have a better life. And like I said, there are very simple strategies. And the work involved is remembering to use the strategy every single time it comes up. And for me, as I work through a lot of this, because I'm still working through this myself, sometimes, you know, my fears come up on a really tough day. My fears come up like every 5 minutes. And I have to continually go back to the strategy of shifting my thoughts and shifting my words all day long. Other days, it's a lot better and it flows more easily. But the work really is, or it starts with making the commitment to yourself to live the life that you know you want.
Okay. Yeah,
and the
to
work,
me.
Oh, I'm sorry. And the work really is that commitment to making the choice every single time you're aware of it, learning from what doesn't work and doing something differently, learning what to do differently, and getting the support, too. That's why a lot of people come to me as a personal coach, is to get the support to wake up and create the life that they really want and know
yeah.
they deserve.
And see, to me, I think that's one of the important things, because if we look at what's called the human condition or human history through many different religions' eyes, there's this undercurrent of some suffering and struggle type of a thing. And what you're pointing out earlier was so important, is that when we're living in that place of love, oh my gosh, we're like that happy little baby that when people bring a happy baby into the room, everyone wants to go be near it because it feels so wonderful, because that baby is expressing all this life energy, this joy.
Yeah.
And it's like, ooh, let me drink that in.
I want to touch that. I want to eat that up. Yes.
Yeah. And so to me, I know part of that in my own life is the idea of, one, noticing, okay, that's I like the idea of what you're saying, evolution, because if we think of a New Year's resolution, I'm going to be happy every day this year. Every moment of every day is going to be expressing love and joy. And, well, golly gee, if I haven't been doing that for 15 years on a consistent basis, that's a big leap.
Well,
so,
it's a lot like deciding that you want to get in shape, walking into the gym and expecting to be in better shape the minute you walk in the gym. It requires regular, consistent effort over time to build muscle, to lose fat, to increase your cardio capacity, all of those. So it's great creating that intention, and then it's making the commitment to taking regular, consistent action to move in that direction. And that's why the journey from fear to love, it's a continuum for fear to love. We're not really all in fear or all in love. We're always somewhere in the middle with a whole lot of stuff going on inside, and it's how we choose, or what we choose to give our energy and time and attention and focus to. And if we give it to our fears, then they get stronger and they grow. If we give it to loving, compassionate thoughts, that's what we get more of.
Ah, and I'm particularly fond of your chapter in the book, The Unconscious Relationship versus the Evolutionary Relationship, where on the two pages, one page on one side of the book and the other page on the opposite side, you're contrasting the unconscious relationship and what that would look like or sound like with the evolutionary relationship. So we can
That's the workbook. That's where the reader gets to figure out where they are right now, because, again, you can't change what you're not aware of. So if you're aware that you're in fear in certain areas of a relationship, then you can start changing it. You can start doing something differently. And if you find that you're in the place of love, primarily in love, in other areas of a relationship, that's something fabulous to celebrate, that you're doing really great with it.
Yes, that's right. Now, how do we give ourselves points or some way to keep encouraging ourselves to move on further on this path? Because I'm guessing that there would be possibly some backsliding or
sure. That's part of the human condition, is that, you know, expecting consistency from the human experience is going to make you crazy in a heartbeat, because the human experience is just not consistent. We have emotions, we have feelings, we have internal things going on, we have external things going on, and it's as if we're always responding in multitudes of different ways, and the more conscious and awake we are of how we're responding, if we're responding more from fear, if we're responding more from love, in a lot of these different situations, just being the observer of that can help us start making positive changes.
Okay. And to me, I think that's particularly important when you were talking about what I call realistic expectations.
Mm-hmm.
About the human condition and consistency. While we look for that in some areas, realizing that is something that is not totally ingrained in the human consciousness, expecting that can be okay, but dealing with the likelihood of being disappointed is key.
Yeah, and that's how I define anger. And anger really is the result of when our expectations don't match reality. And the more we need a situation or a person to behave the way we want them to or be the way we want it to be, the bigger the gap between our expectations and what's really going on in the world, the angrier we get. And what I suggest in my classes and in a lot of my writing is the only expectation to hold on to is expect to learn something from every situation that you're in.
Well, there you go.
You become a student. And another one of my favorite quotes, which is mine, by the way, is there's no such thing as a failed relationship. There's only the failure to learn from it.
Oh, well, that's an important piece.
Because relationships are fabulous classrooms. There's so much juicy stuff for us to learn about who we are and what we're here to do in the world from our relationships, because they're great mirrors of what's going on inside, which is another benefit to waking up, because it's just absolutely fascinating.
Yes. And see, coming from that place of being fascinated by it, rather than frustrated by it.
Yeah, absolutely. It lightens everything up.
Yeah. See, there's a key for us, folks. I like that.
Shifting from frustrated to fascinated. Yep.
By golly, and we know what fun it is that most of us have had some childhood experiences of discovering things about life or people around us. And we were having fun doing it. And it was neat.
Yeah, enjoying the process of learning from our relationships is a skill that can be taught and it can be learned and it can be developed.
This is important. Now, you have a project called the Fear to Love Project. Could you express a little bit more about that?
Yeah, thank you for asking about that, too. And that really is a project that I've created starting here in Denver of getting my book and relationship empowerment classes and one-on-one coaching into nonprofit service organizations that support at-risk women to become self-sufficient. And the women that I've been working with so far are fabulous women, and many of them have been incarcerated. Some of them have lost their children. They're in drug rehab programs. They're in job training programs. And they have made choices in their lives that have, you know, put them in some very, very challenging situations. And what part of my mission here is to go in and help them learn the instead. Like I said, until we know what to do instead, our only choice is to default to our conditioning. I'm here to teach the instead. What can you do instead of being in that fear, making those choices? How can you make different choices? And I'm just having an absolute ball, and I'm so touched by all the women in a couple of organizations that I've already been working with, how eager they are to learn this and get this, because they're really committed to getting their lives on track and really being there for their children and being better role models for their children. And they're very committed to that. So I want to go out and help them do that more quickly and effectively and efficiently and have more fun doing it. So the Fear to Love Project is me getting the classes and coaching and my book into as many of these nonprofits as I have time and energy for, because it's so important to do that in the world as well.
Ah, okay. Yes, I can imagine that giving someone this information when they've been through all kinds of struggle and stress and strife and fear, that
mm-hmm.
this has got to be that oasis they've been yearning for.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, is there information about this on your website?
Yes, it is. Actually, there's a link on every page to the Fear to Love Project. And if any of your listeners would like to get involved, there's different ways that they can do that. Depending on their situation and what their resources or how we might be able to collaborate, I'm always open to exploring ways to collaborate. My theme for this year, which is carryover from 2008, because I thought it was such a good one, so I wanted to do it again this year, is service plus collaboration equals collective prosperity. When we work together and collaborate in service to others and to humanity, we all prosper.
Yes. Well, hooray. There's something worth doing, isn't it?
It feels pretty good to me.
Yeah, exactly. That's where we use the feeling meter to check. Are we
yeah.
in fear or are we in love here?
That one's in love for me. Yes,
yeah.
Definitely.
So that happy feeling and flowing
yeah.
and sharing and giving and receiving.
Yes.
Now, as we've got just a couple minutes left, and we've been talking about giving a lot, there's a chapter in your book that's titled, This Is All About You. And I'm wondering, well, isn't that selfish?
Yeah, well, that's what we were taught, is, you know, don't make it about you and, you know, don't brag and don't be selfish. And yet, your life, Ken, is all about you. My life is all about me, what I'm here to learn, what I'm here to do. And it has to start inside. In order to change the world, each one of us has to start inside ourselves. And our thoughts, our words, and our actions are all about our own fears, where we are between and along the continuum between fear and love. And it really has to start with each one of us. So for everybody out there listening, your life is all about you, and your impact on the world, either positive or negative, is all about you. You're the only one that can make the changes in your own life to create that ripple effect that goes out into the world. So your life is all about you.
Well, hooray. So we can look out for our best interest, following your principles, and make the world better for others at the same time. Is that right?
Absolutely. It's that ripple effect. When you take care of what's going on inside and come from a more loving place, that will ripple out to all of your relationships, your family, your community, your work, your city, your town, and it does, I believe it really gets out into the world.
Mm. Wow. Well, folks, this is wonderful. Now, there's just got about a minute to wrap up. I'd like you to share anything you'd like, as we encourage people to go to Laurie Cameron, LaurieCameron.com.
Mm-hmm.
And what little wrap-up moments in about 40 seconds do you have there, Laurie?
Let's see. Wrap-up moments is enjoy the journey. Celebrate the journey. Every day that we get up is a leap of faith, and we get to put one foot in front of the other. And if we look at it from that place of being fascinated and learning and enjoying the growth and enjoying our own evolution, we can't lose.
Well, ta-da. That sounds great to me.
You.
I love it.
Thank you so much for
Laurie,
having me, Kenneth.
You're welcome. Thank you, Laurie, and thank you, beloved listeners, for participating in another fun Advanced Living Radio Hour. Tune in every Saturday for more fun and adventure, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, different times in the middle, of course. And until we meet again, God bless and goodbye for now.
Let go of it.